Welcome to the Productivity Mastery Podcast, presented to you by myself, Stoyan Yankov, productivity and performance coach, keynote and TEDx speaker, and co-author of the Perform Methodology, and the book Perform, the Unsexy Truth About Startup Success. Join me on a journey to discover what some of the world's leading professionals do to be more productive, create peak performing teams, and build successful global companies. New episodes weekly. And now, enjoy today's episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Productivity Mastery, the second episode of 2024. And I'm very excited to welcome my guest today, one of the most high energy, positive person that I've met in the last few years, I would say.
Wow.
how did we meet? Well, interesting enough, she was one of the speakers at the Growth Summit stage at the Web Summit conference in Lisbon. For those of you who are not aware, Web Summit is this massive event with 70,000 people. And I had a chance to be an MC at two of the stages, one of them the Growth Summit, and one of the speakers of the Growth Summit was Helen Murphy, the CEO and co-founder of Oply. We had the greatest time in the backstage. We had a lot of fun. And I got to tell you guys, it's hard to make supply chain sexy, but this lady managed to do that. Like I introduced her on stage and then I see these slides of, Iron Man and Marvel things and supply chain. I'm like, what is going on? So anyway, without any further ado, Helen Murphy, welcome to Productivity Mastery. How are you this morning?
Thanks, Stoyan. Thanks for having me. And I always want to say, do you know in Google Meets where you can do the live emoji reacts and like the fireworks come off? So that's what I was thinking. Yeah. We always, like in our world, because supply chain, when you say it, everyone's like, okay. So we always try to make it a bit interesting, I think. And great to be on the show today. And I've just seen some of my team cheerleading. And yeah, so as we said, we were backstage and we ended up just joking backstage as we were all panicking. And actually that day, I don't know if he said it to you, so they did official hair and makeup at the event. And I went in and was like,
book it.
Did you?
No, I tried. It was too late. I was like, I want to get this perk too.
Right?
But I didn't.
It was so professional as well. And they had, probably like six makeup artists, and who I always think are proper artists, because when I see some things that makeup artists do to people's faces, I'm just like, it's so beautiful what they do. And it's so I went in and I was like, can I get a really natural look? And then you saw me, I came out like pure glitter, like everywhere, like go. So that's how we first met.
That was the most natural. Imagine if you ask for the full package. Or,
exactly,
you know? Yeah. And it was funny because I saw your name, as an MC, I need to introduce you on stage. Yeah. So I look at your name, are you Helen Murphy? And he was like, yeah, that's me. And I'm like, okay. You guys should make a WhatsApp group about Helen Murphy's, and you're like, we actually have one. tell me about the WhatsApp group, and then we go into the real topic.
Yeah, so I was at an event maybe like 6-7 years ago, and there was another Helen Murphy there, and yeah, I always kind of I always liked my name, but I was just like, it's really not unique. So my parents are Irish background, and Murphy's the most, I think, common name in Ireland. So there's actually loads of Helen Murphys. And then we saw it and we made a joke about, oh, I wonder how many other Helen Murphys there are. And then we just like did a quick search of like LinkedIn in its early days and Facebook at the time. And there were loads of us. So we just started inviting people to a WhatsApp group of, yeah, if you're called Helen Murphy. And yeah, there's just a wide group now and everyone does like entirely different things. And we're more I say active at some times than others, but yeah, so everyone should start a group of their name because you never know.
If anybody who's listening is called Helen Murphy, make sure to get in touch and you will be, of course, invited to the group. Yeah, excellent.
You need to pass a test first. So
there you go. There you go. Application form. All right, Helen. Let's get to the topic of today. Today we'll talk about how to thrive as a founder. As a female founder, my team suggested this topic, and I can see we have quite a bit of people interested to learn from you. And I wanna start from the beginnings of the story. When was it that you first decided I want to be a founder?
Yeah, it's a great question. And my grandma would give a different answer to this because apparently I solved a jigsaw when I was 3 and then she knew. But I think it's probably my first time when I even delved into this world was at university. And we had it, so I studied engineering. So everyone thinks I'm related, but I think really good for critical thinking. And we actually did it as our final module where we did a business module. And then there was a university-wide competition to start a business. And so we started, do you know Birchbox? No. I'll get into it. I love beauty. So it's basically a subscription box of brands, and you can get sample sizes of brands and get them delivered every month to test them out. And so we started the male version of that because there was a huge trend towards male skincare, and which we're going to talk about in a minute. So we started that and like entered this university competition and won the competition. And I think at the time, this is what, 10 years ago. And it was one where I think going into the corporate life was actually seen as the main path and the one that you did. And so even though our team won it and we were like, we'll go with this as a business, we actually just decided we all went on corporate paths after that. And so I've had so many side hustles since then and started so many mini companies. And so I think that's where my founding journey started of really feeling like I wanted to own something for myself, I guess. And yeah, so it all started on a whim at uni.
And can you maybe share a little bit about Uply? What is Uply and why starting a company in this space?
Yeah, great question. So I ask myself that every day. And it's, yeah, so I have a background pretty much solidly in consumer goods. And I always say, I've realized this about myself, that I almost need a physical product involved in what I'm doing because it's really tangible for me to see it. Obviously a really literal brain. And yeah, so obviously started my career at P&G and ran the e-commerce business there. And I think I saw when I was there just the challenges that everyone had with supply chain. You'll never walk up to someone on the street and they're like, yeah, I love supply chain. I mean, maybe I wouldn't walk up to people and talk about supply chain on the street, but, and yeah. And then, so started my first business while I was there, called Suds and Goods, and that was selling pet and baby food and accessories. I became known because my most popular product was these like glittery dog collars. And then within like the first 2 years, I actually scaled that to the point that I was going to run that as a proper business. And then there were logistics costs of import costs that like quadrupled overnight. And that meant that my business went from like a 60% margin to a minus 10. And so I always say like supply chain literally killed my business. And so I had to like a quick sale on that. And then, yeah, so, and then I worked at Bain, which is the consulting group, and specialized there, again, in very physical businesses, a lot of finance, supply chain transformations. And again, I was like, this actually just impacts everyone. So from corporates to like smaller companies, et cetera. And yeah, so met my co-founder, Martin, at Entrepreneur First, which is a startup incubator. And he's a big data guy. I would say his hair is as tall as it is because it holds just a brain of data. and he's probably watching this as well, so morning. And so I think from, and we were looking at this, and our general problem statement was supply chain is a mess in consumer goods. And so it goes here, but we interviewed probably over 200 people when we first started to pattern out where the problems were. And we found just for small, medium companies that like sourcing products, getting a fair access to suppliers, et cetera, came up over and over again. So that's where Optimized Supply, Optly, came from.
And when was it that you were sure this is a guy I can trust, this is a person I can co-found a company with?
Yeah, when we bonded over peppermint tea. So this is, we were just talking about tea. So it was, so how it works on Entrepreneur First. Have you ever watched like Love Island or anything like this?
No.
Oh, you're probably not.
I'm sure the audience have done that. So,
yeah. I'm a real like trashy TV watcher. So it's how I decompress. But so it's effective. You get, there's probably 70 founders in there and really impressive people. Like just some of the most brilliant minds. Like I just loved it. And it's, you speed date them effectively to try and find your one. And yes, yeah, so Martin and I think we were actually, he was like my second person I met. And then you have to kind of like fight for each other for founders. And yeah, I think for us, it was always really important. We have a very similar moral grounding. And our biggest thing, we went team first. So we knew we had the exact same idea of the type of team we wanted to build and the type of culture we wanted to build. And then it was almost idea second. And so I think that's what we bonded on, like first and foremost.
So did you have the idea in mind already when you met him? It was more like, I need to build something. Let me go find a co-founder and let's build some stuff.
Yeah, so co-founder first. And I knew I wanted to do something in consumer goods. And yeah, and then obviously that became quite apparent. And he wanted to do something with like big data, which consumer goods is very big data. And yeah, so I didn't have a firm idea, no.
I just want to go back a little bit. You mentioned you've been a consultant, you've been working for Bain. Yeah. What have you learned from that experience that helps you to be a better founder today?
Yeah. So great question. I've actually never been asked that question, which is unusual, actually. Everyone always wants to talk about other things, about P&G randomly. But it's, I think, probably the biggest thing of all, apart from building extremely organized presentations that line up perfectly, which my team probably don't enjoy me for, is critical thinking. So I think that's been a theme throughout my career. And I actually spoke to, she's called Gemma, and she's head of, it's a marketing agency called Mediacom. So she heads one of the divisions there. And when I spoke to her about like the founding journey, and she said to me, the most important things you'll learn is clarity of communication and critical thinking. And I, at the time, was like, you know, I can talk well, that's fine. I couldn't. And then, so I think at Bain, that's what we were taught so heavily, that you think in such a structured way and you can almost tackle any problem. So I have this mass A3 sheet where I can like tackle any problem and get the answers to it. And so I think being able to see through it, see the next step, see where the solution could go, etc., that is amazing for a founder, because you have so many things going on at all times and you have to know which is important and then how to get to actually decision-making, problem-solving really, really quickly. So I'd say that.
This podcast is about productivity and many of the listeners are founders, entrepreneurs. And of course, it could be really challenging to start running your own thing, right? Because when you're part of a corporate structure or bigger organization, the project's a little bit more structured. You kind of know what your areas are. And when you start your own company, initially you're the chief everything officer, right? You're the CEO of everything. So you got to be able to prioritize, to be more structured, to delegate effectively. I wonder if you have any kind of a process. You said structure is so important. Like, how do you decide on a monthly, on a weekly, on a daily basis what to focus on as a founder?
Yeah. So I always say structure is important, but I have a heavily unstructured brain. So I've got ADHD, and so my brain is constantly all over the place. And so this is a lifelong challenge, actually, to get it there. And so if you saw probably the 50 tabs that are open on my laptop right now, this wouldn't be a great answer. But I think actually it's just really deciding on what are probably the 2-3 most important parts of your week. Because I think we get really distracted with the meetings and the bits and pieces of, I start my week with what is the one thing that I need to either achieve or the main objective of the week. Because otherwise it goes to almost like detail level for me. Because if you just think I need to get these tasks done, then almost you'll get lost in the task that you do. Whereas you think this is the main thing I need to achieve. Everything I do, I'm like, does this get me closer or further away from probably what the team needs to achieve for the week? So I think that's how I structure my time, is almost what is important. And then if it's not, we just restructure, actually, and we take it out.
And on a day-to-day basis, do you do anything to help yourself and sort of like to be more focused, like, because you're going all around the place? Do you work in time blocks? Do you have a list? Like, what do you do to actually remain focused on these major important tasks?
Yeah, I'm actually fidgeting right now. So I have like a fidget in my hand. So I'm constantly fidgeting. And I think if you actually saw my desk right now, there's probably at least 20 things to play with. Often in my day, like if I say yesterday, I had 15 meetings in a day and all of them required my input. So none of them were just sit back, listen meetings. And keeping yourself motivated in that, I think actually a really big one is focusing on entirely on that meeting at the time. For example, if we talk about meetings, where I think a lot of the time when we're in meetings, we're often doing something else, or we're like tapping away on our phone or otherwise. And I think that's why always you don't get everything from it that you need to. And so I think, I can't remember what company I worked for where we did this, and it was always in meetings, like laptop down, like nothing else distracts you apart from fidgets. And then that is where you can effectively, I think, get the most from your meetings. Because I think most time we get like 30-40% from meetings, and then you end up trying to catch up for the rest of the day and you're inefficient. So
Thanks for being super open and sharing where you are, Helen. I think it's quite useful for the audience. Many people who are entrepreneurs, and everybody's different if you think about it. There's no single person that is completely productive and focused at all times. That's not how it works. I used to think there's these superhumans, like, I don't know, these Tim Ferriss and David Allens of the world that are always on the whole day, super structured. They never get distracted. And then I started speaking to some of these people, like David Allen. Yeah. Very productive person, you know, the legend, the productivity kind of like guru, right? Like, and then he told me, "Stoy, I'm probably the laziest person you know." and I'm not the most structured person. Yeah. I learned to know myself and organize myself for something that works for me. He created the GTD so that, first of all, he helps himself, but then he helps others. This is a system that helps me to have an external brain and to operate within the boundaries of what I want to produce, what I want to achieve, what are my intentions. And the more I talk to people like you, successful people like you, like all these great people on the podcast, the guests of the podcast, the more I understand, you know, like everybody's different.
Yeah.
And self-awareness plays a big role.
Sure.
And I wonder did you have any kind of experiences? Be it, I signed up for this seminar and then I learned something about myself, or I went through this challenge and I had to figure it out. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but at the moment, if I look at you, I'll say, this lady knows herself and she's doing things her way.
Yeah. And I really want to talk to you about what you just said. So I'll answer the question and then may jump back in. So this is probably quite an interesting one of, and we actually do this with our team a lot, where I thoroughly believe that everyone has a superpower, that you are the best in the world at something. And we actually, a really random one in our team that we found on one of our team trips was one of our teams really good at throwing things into like small gaps. And I mean, she can like throw an earring at your ear and it'll get into your ear. So I was like, right, we found yours. But I think everyone is just exceptional at something. And the way our society works is, especially from a schooling level, it values very particular things. And like that strategic thinking, critical thinking, numerical reasoning, etc. And actually, I think I read about this is like 52 levels of intelligence across very different factors. And I think if you can zone in exactly where yours is and like leverage your strengths, because if you think about the really like famous founders, I'd say in the world, like your Steve Jobs, your Mark Zuckerberg, etc., they're all known for something. And even like Elon Musk is like for his first principle approach, or Steve Jobs was always for his extreme creative thinking. No one sat there like, well, they really weren't good at finishing off that contract. And I think if you can find that and leverage your strengths, you go 10 times faster than trying to improve a weakness. And so, yeah, that really resonates about leaning into it. And my mum has said that I beat my own drum since I was 2 years old. So I don't think that's ever changed.
Great. By the way, we have a few people joining. I just want to shout out everybody. So Clement is saying, hello. Anastasia is saying hi. Hi, Anastasia. Hi. And then we have Kerr saying, shout out to Charlie Thompson. you gotta help us out with that one, Helen. What does that mean?
So Charlie's one of my sales team. And I have no idea why she's maybe because she beats to her own drum as well. So Charlie's got like luminous yellow trainers, and on her first ever day in the office, just came in with these like bright yellow trainers you could see from across the room. And I was like, she's going to do well here. So
love it. So everybody who's listening live, feel free to post your question in the comments and we can take some questions about entrepreneurship, the life of a founder, and anything else that you want to ask Helen. Helen, I'm curious to learn more about the journey. And I think sometimes we like to present entrepreneurship as this super fun, cool, sexy thing that everybody wants to be entrepreneur, right? Like put it on your Instagram and on LinkedIn. I'm a founder, I'm an entrepreneur. And in many ways, when we start sharing information, posting on social media, we like to post the achievements. I'm speaking at the Web Summit. We landed this funding round. We launched a new product, right? And we create this little bit twisted picture of what entrepreneurship really is. Yeah. Can you tell me about the real journey? How has it been for you from the beginning? Did you have these days that you felt like, maybe I should consider getting another job? Like how was it for you? Can you give us a bit of a real picture of your journey so far?
Yeah. How real do you want me to go?
All the way. Let's go.
Okay. So, and that's probably, I have really no social media either. So obviously bar LinkedIn, because it's important for work, but yeah, apart anything else, I just don't have it. And that's probably the way my brain works. Like I crave dopamine. And so it was so addictive, I just don't do it anymore. And yeah, I think that's firstly very freeing. And secondly, on the entrepreneur journey, and yeah, I agree and I think it's brilliant that almost everyone's encouraged now to do their own thing and have that freedom. And I mentor a lot of kind of people earlier in their like whether age or journey of like how they can get there on that entrepreneur journey. And it's, I would say it's the highest highs and the lowest lows you'll ever go through. And when I say that, it's when you have that moment where one of your customers like just really loves it. Like that's a proper high because that's something you truly built. Or when you have a moment that I say it's, my team are all quite like, have quite big humility, I guess. And I'll see it sometimes during my team where they just do something really good, or like the people like give them props or something, like when it's really impactful what they did. And you just see, do you know, that kind of slight smile where they're like, and I think bringing all those people together, and it's a weird feeling actually, because those people would have never met probably before, or would have never met in their life, and seeing all them together is my ultimate, and probably my co-founder's ultimate as well. But I think on the other side, it's, as I say, I'm quite an impulsive person, so I don't do anything by halves. I'm either all in or all out, which means my emotions are either all in or all out. And so I think everyone knows this, everyone calls it my quarterly break. So it probably happens like every like 6 months or so rather than quarterly. I think they're being a bit harsh, but I go so hard, go, 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 that I just like almost go under for a week. And I mean, properly go under, like can't talk to anyone, just block out the world. And I, going back to almost like leveraging who you are as a person, everyone is always like, pull back, or if you just manage it better in this way or otherwise. And for me, I've tried every type of way to do that. It just isn't how my mind operates. So like, as I always say to people, you'd rather have me on for 50 weeks of the year. And by the way, if anyone's starting a company, entrepreneurship is, as you all know, Stian, 52 weeks a year. You do not get breaks. And someone said it in my team the other day, they were like, I feel like I'm letting you down by going on holiday. And I was like, no, like you're entitled to holidays. And they're like, but that means you're going to have to work. And I was like, yeah, you sign up to that when you start. So yeah, I think it's actually just accepting that it's not all going to be okay. Like, do you know when people try to excuse when they get upset or they get angry, or depends how angry you get, like there's a level, but like it's, when people are like, I'm so sorry for this emotion I'm feeling. And it's like, it's okay to feel that emotion as long as you kind of, you're comfortable in it with yourself, and then you can like move on from that. But yeah, so I think they're probably the ups and downs of the journey.
Yeah, I can relate. Being your own boss, being a founder, being an entrepreneur, it's 24/7. Something can happen and there's nobody else. It's not on the company, right? Like you're the last person in control. If something breaks, if something is not okay, if the funding is not happening, go last minute, somebody is, you know, saying no, like there's so much rejection, so much, you know, especially early on when you're trying to build momentum and you probably don't have so much resources. So you have all this excitement, you're passionate, and it's going really up and down. And I wonder, what do you do in the lowest of moments? Obviously, you're taking this 1 week completely off the grid, but you can always do that, right? I mean, you can get yourself into a hole when things are burning, let's say, like when things are not in a good place. So what are your reboot tools for the moment?
Yeah. So I'd say, if I say for the moment, it's probably different to what it was last year as well, where I think sometimes when you're so go, 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 almost everything in your life is almost unstructured as well. So there's, I think, I'm a massive fan of templates, by the way. That's probably the consultant in me. So there's this one where you basically measure the factors of your life that you put, and it's generally the most important things, like your family, your friends, your wellness, your hobbies, your work. And you measure them all out of 10. And the rule is typically you can't be 10 on all. And you'll always find the one that is like dipping at that time. And it's actually just, I think, diving into that and knowing that about yourself, what's affecting you. Because I think a lot of the time, and I see this a lot in my team and I do it myself, you're just like, whoa, I'm overwhelmed. There's so much going on. And actually, it'll be one thing and maybe another thing that's gone on top of it, another thing, but that is really affecting you. And if you can know that about yourself, I think then you can solve for it. Like, so if I think about it, for me, I let my health totally go away last year. I used to be a competitive like sports person. And so it's doing like exercising a lot, eating well was always very important to me. Aside from when my team Vlad just tagged me in a chocolate post and put the biggest chocolate addict I've ever seen. So chocolate is a vice. But
I've seen your LinkedIn post with a chocolate where you just kind of committed to well-being for 2024.
And I was like, genuinely, I was eating chocolate for like at least two meals a day last year, like disaster. And yeah, and this is, I say, over Christmas this year. Do you know when you go home and it's slightly that comforting environment? Mm-hmm. And my mum is just the kindest person I know. And she just doesn't judge you. She doesn't ever get frustrated with anyone for anything. And so she just like broke me down, I think. And then totally refreshed this year, as I say. So I need a level of control in my life over something. So if it's all the fire is burning around me, something in my life has to be controlled. And right now it's, yeah, eating non-processed veggie food. But yeah, I think that's really important, like maintaining control in something if everyone else is burning.
You know, last year I had different cycles. As a speaker, as a consultant, there's certain periods of the year that are a lot more busy. For example, the period from the middle of March to the middle of June is very busy, specifically Q4, you know, starting from maybe even the end of Q3, but like from September to the middle of December, maybe to the 20th of December, it's crazy full of events, workshops, company retreats. So I'm fully booked usually. Yeah. So I did have different kind of periods, a little bit periods of, you know, I can be a little bit more grounded and have not so much travels. And when I do, I get the chance to go to the gym regularly, to exercise, to eat better, you know, to sleep properly. And you can just see the difference with these small habits. Like everything, different things work for different people, right? But just, hey, what gives you this strength and this stability as a founder? Like, what are these kind of pillars? Food is huge. Yeah. Food is huge. When I start eating not so well for a few days, you can just feel it. You're feeling groggy. You're not feeling, you know, you can't really solve problems. You can't really be creative. You're not so excited and motivated. And what is the kind of message we send out to our teams if we're not taking care of ourselves and our well-being? And it could be hard. It's so easy to make an excuse and say, I don't have an hour and a half to go to the gym. We need to finish this project. Yeah, but you've done that for 6 months.
Yeah.
That's not sustainable. It's not productive.
And what do you do at the gym?
So I do two things now. I'm lifting.
Okay.
It's not the best. I used to have a personal trainer, which is quite effective, quite productive, because first of all, you know, the decision fatigue syndrome for founders, like you want to avoid making decisions, even if it's the small decisions, because you're making so many decisions every day. That is like, you know, the biggest benefit from having a personal trainer was I can delegate a little bit of decision making. What's the next exercise I should do? Which machine should I use? How much weight should I put? Like, literally, I just enter the gym and then I'm just doing whatever I'm told. So that's really, really good. I found for myself, because I'm also really kind of fire kind of person. Yeah. I need something fun. Yeah. You know, like I'm extroverted. I go into the gym by myself without headphones, it's not the best idea. You know, it's just I'll do it once or twice, then I'm probably not going to be so consistent. But I play squash, which is like great cardio, but it's fun, you know, it's competitive. You know, you want to beat your friend. Then when I go to the gym, I mean, group kind of exercises are good because, again, you go, it's very effective. And then personal trainer, lifting, still trying to figure it out, but still not as consistent as I want to be, but it's definitely getting better.
And just interested on that, do you feel like you want to achieve anything by doing it, or is it entirely for your own wellness?
I would say the second one.
Okay.
At the moment. Okay. I definitely think there's more effective ways to do it, right? Like, hey, these are the kind of goals I set for myself, for my body. For me, it's more I want to the well-being, the energy, the feeling that I get after I finish with an exercise throughout the whole day. That's at least for me.
That's right.
Kind of balancing out on all the effort I put into what I do.
Yeah. I actually love as well that so many, like, lifting has become such a thing. So it was always kind of, do you know, people in the mirrors at the gym, like, pumping whatever they could, like, naming left and right bicep. And, like, when I go to the gym now, it's just every gender's doing it. Everyone is doing lifting. And I don't know, like, because that it actually gives you, do you ever do it where you do the lift and then you're just like, you actually feel like, I'm like a strong, like, it's such a good feeling.
It is a feeling. Get your protein shake after the, you know, just like, oh, take a shower, like, oh, so good.
Yeah. You joke, I actually had like a delivery yesterday and my housemates were like, what is in this really heavy box? And I found these protein shakes from America that are just made of vegetables. And then they flavor it with cacao and it just tastes like a chocolate milk. This isn't an advert, by the way, just get really into products. And it's like flavored with cacao, so it tastes like chocolate milkshake. And yeah, so if you see our kitchen, it's like a bro's kitchen. Because it's just like protein shakes lined up.
Good, good. Well, we're going to keep you accountable because now you shared in front of us, Helen, that you're going to be, you know, taking a better care of your well-being. Tell me about the title of the episode today is Thriving as a Female Founder. Mm-hmm. And if you look at data and statistics, I don't have something concrete in front of me, but I think there is somewhere between 10-20% of all the founders are female founders, which is not really a great proportion, right? Like, how would you explain that? And what would you tell to all the amazing ladies out there listening to this podcast and considering starting their own startup?
Yeah. Firstly, there's an amazing Spotify playlist and I feel like I can never swear when I'm live. So
go ahead. You're free.
I think it's called, I was just going to look up on my phone, but I think it's like basically, it's got boss and ladies in the title, and I won't say the middle word, but, and it's the best playlist ever to listen to if you want to pump yourself. But that stat is actually an interesting one, and I think is one obviously heavily reported. And I say, when I mentor maybe other founders or younger people, I think the stat is way higher than that. It's probably 10-20% of men get the publicity or the funding. And I think that's probably the bigger issue here of, I think YouGov did a survey on this of actually, like, I think over 50% of businesses are actually started by women. And it's because a lot of them are like family businesses or local businesses. So they don't get that big publicity that a lot of the male founders get. And even what is it like 1.41? So I love stats, but like 1.7% of VC funding goes to women, and that is a big proponent of that because that gets all the publicity. So I'm in like loads of like female founder groups, and it's this gets discussed a lot. But I don't think it's that women aren't doing it. I think they just don't get. Know maybe the right methods to either or want to get publicized actually to get out there.
You know what's interesting? We're yeah. finishing our second book right now, which How is that I can't wait to finish it.
Okay.
Like I'm not a person who loves to write, so but we're close to finalizing the book.
Yeah.
What we did in the first book and what we do in the second book. The first book is called Perform: The Unsexy Truth About Startup Success.
Yeah.
It's about leadership, performance, and productivity in startups. The second book is called Perform in Times of Crisis,
yeah.
soon to be released.
Okay.
And
wait, go ahead.
you want to ask me when is the deadline? I'm not going to tell you, but soon to be released. So what we did in both books is we interview a lot of founders and business leaders, and then we feature their stories, examples, so we can make it more relatable, more real with practical ideas and tools. I got to tell you, I've been struggling with getting female founders to share their stories.
Mm-hmm.
Like I ask any guy, hey, would you like to be featured in the book? Yeah, sure. Let's do it. Like not everybody, but like it's unless they're super, super busy. Right.
Yeah.
But when it comes to female founders, I don't know, maybe 8 out of 10 will tell me, what do I have to share? I haven't achieved anything yet. Let me think about it. And it's actually much more difficult to convince them to be featured in the book and to share their learnings.
Yeah. And that doesn't surprise me whatsoever. And there was actually a post on LinkedIn yesterday by just one of the most brilliant founders I know called Amelia Christie Miller. And she runs a company called Bold Bean. So she's changing the whole like beans movement, because beans are having a moment, obviously in food, and wicked founder, like scaled that business like crazy. And only yesterday, after 4 years into the company, she changed her title to CEO and did a post about this, and you saw the reactions to it, and none of the reactions like, what? It was almost every reaction was like, I totally understand. And I still feel weird saying that. So if I think about like, basically, obviously I've had my work friends in this realm, but outside of it, my very close friends, nobody's from this world. And so when I say CEO, they're like, oh, the CEO. they're not saying it in a mean way. It's just become a bit of a joke. Mm-hmm. But jokes mean something, right? And I've got very supportive friends as well. And so you're going to say something.
No, but do you think it's because you are a female founder? That's the reaction?
I think probably not consciously. So I think because we have, I guess no one else in our entire group has actually started a company. So I don't know the answer to that concretely.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just interesting when Amelia said it yesterday. I have a very different experience of this. And this is maybe why, as my life coach would say, I have extremely high self-worth. And I don't think everyone has that. I had extremely supportive parents. Like, we didn't grow up with a lot of money, but like I never doubted like their love or their support for me. And I was like a weird kid, hey? So I had like ADHD from a young age. I like loved maths. Like, I did sport, so I was kind of cool. But absolute like just proper like geek at school. And I think from that, like almost they never made me feel weird about anything. They were just like, you're so amazing. Like just they can't see it yet. And that I think has traveled throughout my life of I'll actually put this down to other people. So not myself, like obviously you have self-awareness and otherwise, but I've had amazing people back me throughout my life. So I'm not going to do a shout out like I'm at the Oscars, but they are the people who have almost bolstered, like, you are amazing. You need to go do something, speak something, whatever. And I almost feel like, I'm not going to gender this actually, because I think just certain personality traits are more inclined towards a gender, but actually it doesn't apply across the board. And So if I think if you looked at the characteristics of our team and then tried to gender them, if you didn't know them, you wouldn't get it right. But yeah, I think it's really like, and this is a big one, like surround yourself with just exceptional people who will mentor you, because exceptional people will not knock you down. Like they just, and I mean, do you know people who just, I always call it like connectors. So do you know people who just naturally connect you or naturally help you? They are great mentors to have because they genuinely want to grow. So yeah, I think.
How have you found these people yourself? You mentioned being part of many groups of entrepreneurs, female founders. When was it that you decided I need to, you know, start reaching out and being part of such groups? And you know, the how to is always important and interesting for people listening.
Yeah. So typically they find you, by the way, as soon as you get any publicity as a founder, groups find you and then they try and get you in. So I've actually found most of my mentors through my work. So I'd say that is probably the biggest learning, I would say, is don't find the person who, if I think about in companies, like there's the people who like prop you up kind of just by like saying nice things to you, or there's the people that maybe compete with you or whatever that is. There's probably someone in your company that I call it promote you, and I don't mean promote you in like a physical, you get a promotion sense, where they're constantly trying to get you to where you want to be. And they're constantly like backing you to get there. And whoever that is, like latch onto them, because they saw something in you that they believe in. And that's really rare in life, because we see things that we believe in different people, I think. And if you found someone that believes in you, like that's really special. So I just make, that's like my probably lifelong goal for like both myself and people around me, like believe so strongly in people that they never doubt themselves. And obviously they will, but yeah. So I say, just go find that person who's always like, who actually pushes you, doesn't appease you, like pushes you. And they're my mentors. So.
Love it. Love it. I don't want to go gender, but actually I think it's going to be really useful for the listeners to learn from your experience. Now, you're a female founder and you talk to a lot of female founders. If you were to give three pieces of advice to the listeners, what would that be? Like you have these conversations, you understand the struggles, like what would be your three pieces of advice with respect to thriving as an entrepreneur, specifically to our female listeners?
Yeah. So I think there's probably the first one would be, it's very, so because you have something which makes you a bit different in the industry, particularly in certain industries, you actually, I dive into what other people's differences are. So I was actually at this dinner and it was a supply chain dinner and I was the only woman there. There's no women in supply chain. Sorry, there's lots in supply chain. There's not many female founders in supply chain. And so everyone was male and we were talking about, I was saying, I can't get enough female engineers. Like I want like a fully like diverse, I love diverse minds ever in the company, but I can't get enough female engineers. And then one of the guys went, why are you looking for a female engineer? And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, well, you just choose the best engineer. And I was like, you have to positively bias in some way, because some groups just won't see your job or won't be in the networks that where it gets shared to or similar. And I think if you have something different about yourself, you have more empathy for maybe someone else that has something different about themselves. So like hugely lean into that, because we should appreciate our differences, right? And that's what makes everything like just go way faster, frankly. And yeah, so I say that's the first one. And then, so this is like a consulting answer, because every consultant answers as like one, two, three. And you know this?
And love it. Love it. Let's keep going.
So probably second one would be, I really rejected that phrase for a long time. So I was like, I'm a founder. And still, you probably saw me this morning when we were testing mic, etc. Even when I saw female founder, I was a bit like, And I've learned to embrace that throughout my probably tenure now, of it's okay to be a female founder, because you are female, if that's how obviously you guard yourself. And yeah, really just embrace being that, because the people you get to meet through that, and everyone else like latches onto like levels of publicity and whatever else, and you need to almost get yourself out there to even reach your customers, right? So if you want to get in front of your customers or whatever else, it's just, you can generally resonate with people a lot more if you just like lean into it. And I'd say probably the third one, try not to get too frustrated when you go into entrepreneur world and it's female stuff comes up all the time. So like my team say I go on a rant about this all the time, but do you know, and I see that VC thing come out when it's like less than 2% of funding goes towards women, or when I see it in the industry where a woman's been discriminated against or otherwise, my team don't hear the end of it for like a solid day. And I think that's really important, because it actually keeps the openness within the team that they can talk about things. So maybe I'll change this one of keep your frustration as long as you do something with it. So it's now like my team is the most open team in the world. Like a lot of founders will say, I don't know how to get my team to talk to me or whatever else, like not an issue. So creating that open forum by being comfortable to talk about topics that are maybe what would be regarded as softer in that regard of like fertility is one we talk about a lot, like the movement in fertility. There's actually another great founder called Helen who runs a company called Hertility. And yeah, I think, sorry, you'll see my brain get distracted because I spoke for too long. But yeah, I think leaning into those discussions that maybe a male counterpart wouldn't lean into.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. The mindset, it's going beyond kind of genders again. It's like like the growth mindset, the positive mindset, getting the most out of a situation. Like, what's good about it? What are your strengths? Embracing, not taking your strengths for granted, because depending on where you were born, what's your gender, what's your background, who did you meet, you might have some strengths and resources and assets nobody else has. Yeah. So how can you utilize them so you can get the best out of a situation or out of your entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah.
As an example, wanting to speak at a conference, I got to tell you, you have a much better advantage if you are a female founder. If there's two founders, the female founder is going to have a much better advantage. Use it. Why not? Use it. Like, there's so many. Because there's not so many, I guess, that are there. So, but then again, that's an advantage, right? Like, what are all the other advantages based? Like, there's so many great things that if you look a little bit and not take them for granted, but actually embrace them and lean to them, it's that's the way to go.
Yeah, and throughout time, right? We focus on like affinity groups of people who we feel affinity with, and actually like groups that are like a smaller group can make massive impacts and actually change things, because you get tighter in your smaller group. So like say I went to this like fintech dinner drinks thing, and I actually took a picture, there's a selfie of me, because there were four female founders and there were I think 300 men, and that's the wildest I've seen. And just about one of our investors, actually they just started a new company
I feel like I'm just like an advert for people. I just love it when people do things. But one of our two of our investors are two of our female investors are we've got an even split male female, and we purposely did that across our cap table. And Ruth and Sophie, who work for a company called Fox Capital, and they're such a proponent of this in the industry. Of they actually run a conference just for female VCs. And in that room of, say, 300 men that were there, they're all like having maybe random conversations and otherwise. The women bonded. Like, we are all still in touch. We like bolster each other. We go, etc. I wonder how many of the men do that in the room, or if they had like quite a shallow conversation. So I think that's a big power in it.
Definitely, definitely. Helen, final topic I want to cover a little bit with you. You mentioned probably two or three times during the conversation how important is team for you.
Yeah.
If you can maybe share some thoughts on that, what were some of your lessons and learnings when it comes to building a strong team? Can you maybe share, you know, some of your secrets when it comes to attracting the right kind of people in such a competitive talent attraction landscape?
Yeah, if it's competitive, maybe I shouldn't share my secrets. But it's, and I actually didn't realize how long we've been on the chat. I thought we were like 20 minutes in. So it's time flies, hey? Yeah, so talent attraction.
For all the people who are not in your industry in the different countries and they're not competitors for talent, what would be your...
So I think a first one is CV screening, actually. I've got major views on CV screening. We do totally blind CV screening. So I don't know their name. We actually scratch off their experience. So like the jobs they've worked for, et cetera, and their universities. Because like, I don't even believe you need to go to university to be like wicked at a job. And so we do totally blind screening firstly. So then we choose people entirely based on their skills, what they've achieved. And so I'd say that's the first one to unbias you at first step, but then you have to get to interview, right? And how we attract diverse talent in this space, I think just being really open and out there. Like, if nobody knows you exist as a company, then they won't apply to you, especially as a startup. Like, people won't take that risk. So that's actually why I speak at a lot of events. Firstly, it's like Beyonce when she's got Sasha Fierce when she goes on stage, but I think I turn into a different person on stage. So I love that side of it. But actually, we've met so many people through those ways of people just see you and your face just gets known, your company gets known. And I want someone either to watch this or watch me on stage and be like, God, I'd really like to work for that company. And because otherwise, how do you inspire people? Like, you put out a LinkedIn post. Like, we probably get, it's just my team that likes those, like no one else. And so I think putting yourself out there and being, I'm going to say the terror word, which is authentic, but being like rawly you will attract the people that want to work in that kind of culture in the company. So I'd say that's my biggest advice. It's like, don't hide away from it. Put yourself out there and then you will attract people who want to work for that.
And since you're not hiding away, are you guys looking for some new talent?
Yeah, always. So I say the team is everything. Like, and anyone who hasn't realized that yet is, yeah, team is everything. So we are... we've got quite a few roles, actually. Like, we're scaling quite a lot at the moment. And so we've got chief of staff. So that'll be effectively our right-hand person, seat at the table, highly operational. So if you're an ex-consultant or current consultant who also has startup experience, please send me a message. And then
where could people find that? Like let's be clear. Like, where could people go and find these roles and positions?
Yeah, so we have our Opley Careers page, which I can always send a link to, but I don't have it to hand.
And I'll put it in the podcast notes.
Yeah, great. And so, yeah, we have our Opley Careers page, so you can find full details. And so we've got, like, our head of engineering role, another big role, like sales roles, marketing roles. So, yeah, whatever your vibe is.
Wonderful, wonderful. Wow, it's been almost an hour, Helen. How did that happen? All right, to just wrap up this episode, I just want to once again to say thank you so much, Helen, for being with us and sharing pretty bluntly with no filter all the lessons, all the stories, all the insights and secrets from your journey. Thanks for being with us. Best of luck with Topley. Keep kicking us on stages and with the startup, with the company. I just want to give you the chance before we go to let us know, and everybody listening, once again, what's your focus these days? How can you support SMEs and other companies? Where could people find you and how can you help them?
Yeah, for sure. So obviously find me on LinkedIn myself, and my company's Optly.
Good luck, Helen Murphy. But yes, maybe through the company.
Yeah, so Helen Murphy, you'll probably find like 600 of us as well. So, and obviously my company's Optly, my co-founder Martin. And then, yes, you find me in there. And I literally love helping people early in the journey. Like, it's probably my favorite bit of it. So yeah, hit me up.
Love it. Thanks everybody for listening, making it to the end of the episode. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to share it with a friend that will find the value as you did. And of course, we'll be really happy if you decide to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. There's 171 more episodes with fantastic people like Helen. So we really appreciate all your notes, comments, 5-star ratings. Keep them coming. Thank you. Thank you so much. Heta is very grateful. Thank you so much for the podcast, she said. It was great getting to know you, Helen. Heta, thank you so much for joining. By the way, she's a little rock star. So just saying.
Amazing.
So thanks everybody for being with us, and see you once again next week for another great episode.
Thanks so much, Productivity
Mastery. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to subscribe to my monthly newsletter by visiting stoyanyankov.com, and also learn about the Perform methodology and the Perform book, as well as our various personal and team coaching offers. Stay tuned and keep performing.